Abuse, neglect, household dysfunction, mental illness in the home, the incarceration of a parent, or household substance misuse all may impair our social, emotional, and physical health. The stress and trauma we experience as children stays with us throughout our lives, affecting us in ways we don't expect, impacting our health for a lifetime. But it doesn't have to be that way. Stand by, Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Hello and welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Some studies suggest that almost half of us experience one or more adverse childhood events. This can set us up to become risk takers, to be socially, emotionally, and cognitively impaired. And then there is the disease and disability that can follow. Meet Jane. She had more than her fair share of adverse events from a very young age. Her story is raw and may not be suitable for younger viewers. But watch.
My earliest memories of when I was a child, they say you don't remember anything when you're little, but this I remember, and I was only two when it happened, is my mother walking across the yard, opening the car door, the interior light coming on, her getting in the car, closing the door, and leaving. And when she left, my brother Doug, there were six of us children. There was Robert, Doug, Jerry, Linda, Rick, and I being the youngest, and I was only two. And Doug was holding me really tight because I was trying my best to get out of his arms, and I was screaming and crying because my mommy was leaving and I wanted to go too. And so that was when my mother and father got a divorce. And that was traumatic for us because from that time till I was five, I didn't even get to live at home because my father couldn't take care of a two-year-old. She left all of us six for him to take care of and raise. And so my life became at the neighbor's house, which was Mrs. Quimby. And I love her. She's a wonderful, wonderful lady. But I spent my whole weeks with her, and I came home on the weekend. And so that was a really good thing for me to come home on the weekend. Well, at the age of five, I got to move home. Yay! but it was also sad because that is when the sexual abuse started. My brother Rick, who was older than me, why he started it, I have no idea, but when I was five is when it started, and it wasn't just him. He would invite his friends over too, and it was all of them, sometimes at one time, and sometimes it was just him. And we were left alone quite often because my father had to work, and I was in my brother's care, and so I suffered from sexual abuse till the age of 10, 11 years old, something like that.
And that's so sad. We have the rest of her story later in the show. Chef Mark Anthony makes us a tasty salad. We'll get going with Sean, and then we'll speak with a young physician who is striving to intervene for children like Jane who were born into adverse circumstances. So let's get started with the news. In the headlines, violence breeds aggression, music for the autistic brain, and teens risk heart attacks. Playing violent video games is linked to increased physical aggression, according to an international study of 17,000 adolescents aged 9 to 19. An analysis of 24 studies from countries including the US, Canada, Germany, and Japan found that those who played violent games were more likely to exhibit aggressive behaviour, regardless of how often they played. One of the studies found violent video game players were twice as likely to be sent to the principal's office for fighting. The largest effect was observed among white participants, some effect noted among Asians, and no observable effect among Hispanics, suggesting a cultural difference in the emphasis on maintaining empathy towards victims of aggression. 2 out of 3 homes in the US has a gaming device, so be selective about which games you buy for your kids and encourage healthy recreational choices instead. Music therapy can make a significant difference for children with autism. In a recent study, 51 autistic children aged 6 to 12 received 2 or 3 months of one-on-one therapy that was centered on reciprocal interaction. The children were randomly assigned to musical or non-musical play activities. Brain MRIs were done, and parents completed questionnaires about their children's communication skills, symptoms, and quality of family life before and after the intervention. Parents of the music therapy group reported gains in social communication and the quality of family life. MRI scans showed greater auditory motor connectivity in the music group compared with the non-music group, and lower auditory visual connectivity, which is known to be overconnected in autism. Using musical play can be a fun way to impact your child's brain. Using cocaine, amphetamines, and cannabis increases an adolescent's risk of having a heart attack. Heart attacks are rare in teens, but researchers from Shanghai, China, collected data from more than 2,000 hospitals. They found the rate of heart attacks was increased fourfold by amphetamines, fivefold by cannabis, and 7.5 times by cocaine. Cocaine and amphetamines block the absorption of certain hormones, resulting in a rise in blood pressure and pulse. Marijuana dilates blood vessels, dropping the blood pressure and raising heart rate. All of the drugs can cause spasm in the arteries supplying the heart, thus impairing oxygen delivery and triggering a heart attack. So young people, practice how to say no. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's health news. Today's guest is Dr. Robin Ortiz, internal medicine physician from Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore, Maryland. I asked her how researchers of the ACE study discovered the long-term effects of childhood stress and trauma.
Yeah, so the whole world of adverse childhood experiences, or what's commonly known as ACEs, actually began in the 1990s, around 1998, with a study by Folletti that you're referring to. It was an integrated effort between the Centers for Disease Control and Kaiser Permanente. And it was a study that surveyed 17,000 Americans on 10 common adversities in childhood. So it was only adults, but it was looking retrospectively in 3 categories. So the categories included abuse, neglect, and household dysfunction, and some subcategories that were related to those. And this study found that there was not only an extreme prevalence of existence of adversity in childhood within the United States population, but that it spanned across all socioeconomic domains, both sexes, all races, and it also was associated with chronic disease outcomes. So not only were we just saying, oh, yeah, there's adversity, we know about it, but it may actually be a public health crisis to not be addressing adversity in childhood.
So what sort of chronic diseases were associated with having those issues as a child?
Yeah, great question. And so basically all. The original study did not look at all chronic diseases, but it did identify the ones that are in the top common causes morbidity in the United States of America. So that includes cardiovascular disease, cancer, COPD, or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And importantly, a lot of these chronic diseases, not necessarily in the original study, but later were demonstrated not even necessarily associated with health behaviors. So the ones you'd think about, like, oh, you know, people who experience adversity probably more likely to smoke or drink. Although that's true, in fact, there's a 2- to 4-fold increase of individuals with ACEs who do go on to have troubles with substance use, independent of that, have an increased likelihood of cancer and pulmonary disease as well. But since then, there's been a wealth of research that came, a flood after 1990s, and apparently this week as well, there's been some new studies if you're looking, but that range beyond what we looked at or what the United States had looked at or the CDC had looked at prior. So that includes inflammatory diseases, offsets of cardiovascular diseases like diabetes. So pretty much you name it, whether it's been studied or not is to be determined, but chronic disease across all domains is associated with adversity in childhood.
And how much of an increase are we looking at? You mentioned the two to fourfold increase in, in one thing.
Yeah, and so not all diseases have specifically been looked at in terms of risk. The ACEs study, the original one, since that's where we started with our discussion, a 400% increased risk for COPD. That's huge. The ones I was talking about specifically in reference to lifestyle or behavior associations, two to fourfold increased risk in substance use and mental health disorders. Some are less so, so one to twofold increase when you're talking about cancer specifically. I think that one's particularly of interest because cancer is so diverse in its etiologies, but it depends on which condition you're looking at.
Serious stuff. More from Jane and from Dr. Ortiz in the next segment. But before we go on, there's this.
Did you know that nature is healing to body, mind, and spirit?
Oh, yeah, that's why I like to watch it on television here. It's wonderful, isn't it?
Well, I like watching nature programs on TV too, but it's not the same as getting out in person.
Oh, so you don't like the television? Well, look at those beautiful nature shots on my iPad. Aren't they wonderful?
No, I'm talking about being in nature, in person.
Well, I've got these great nature pictures on my telephone. Look at these.
Ah, you forced me to do it now.
Hey, where are we?
This is what I mean. Outside, in person, better than any TV, iPad, or phone.
Yeah, but don't do that to me again.
What, this?
Hey, quit doing that to me.
What, this? There, that's better. Now you can be in nature, experience with all your senses in three dimensions.
You're right.
Yeah, see, you can hear the birds, you can crunch the leaves, you can feel the wind. So much more enriching than TV.
Oh, but I'm glad you're not talking about that waterfall over there.
Why not?
Because you might.
Nature, don't just look at it, get into it. Doctor's orders. Our special guest in the kitchen today has been a private chef for celebrities, but also chef for thousands of people at a time. So we've got Chef Mark Anthony. What's in store for us today? Because now you're our private chef.
Okay, well, glad to be here. I like doing things that are different and doing things that are original. And so right now we're going to be doing what is called a chickenless chicken salad.
Oh.
And it's chicken salad made out of tofu.
Oh,
now, most chicken salads that are made out of tofu don't really taste even like chicken.
No.
So let's go over the recipe here real quick. I've got one brick of tofu. We've got some soy sauce or Bragg's that we're using today, liquid aminos. A couple of celery ribs, a little bit of red onion, a little bit of red bell pepper. And then I've got some basil and sage and rosemary and oregano because we're going to really blast this with flavor. You can also use some paprika. And then I've got either a simple tofu spread or mayonnaise, veganaise, something like that that you can use.
Okay.
So let me grab a knife here, and we're going to do some cutting here. And you can see I'm just going to cut these babies about that thick. And I'm going to let you put these on the pan here, and we'll get these all laid out. Woo! And... you can tell the thickness of it, what I'm doing here.
Yeah, if you work in metric, this is half a centimeter.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah, well, maybe six, seven millimeters.
Actually, a lot of my recipes
don't
now.
Ask me in inches. What's that?
I'm
your
doing...
recipes are metric?
Yeah, I'm
yay!
Doing the, yeah.
You're welcome to our world.
I'm doing the gram scales with weight and everything when it comes to baking. And,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I have both on them.
Okay.
Okay. Hit it with some of that Bragg's liquid aminos. And you're just gonna splash, 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 splash everywhere.
Really? Woohoo! Yep. I love making a mess in the kitchen.
Just load it up. Load it up.
Am I being too meager?
Yeah, load it up.
We need to be more generous.
Okay. Exactly.
All right. We're really giving it a soaking then.
Okay, just like that. Now this is gonna go in the oven. It's gonna take about 20, 30 minutes. Then you're gonna flip it over. Let it go for another 20, 30 minutes.
All right.
And just like that, it comes out of the oven like this.
Just like that. Whoa!
Now look at the completely different texture that you have.
Oh, wait all. This is rubbery.
Completely different texture.
You're supposed
is that
to say,
that rubber
thank
chicken?
You, thank you.
Is that that rubber chicken joke?
Yeah, yeah. thank you, thank you.
And then what I do is I put it in baggies like this. And you can actually freeze these if you want.
So you just let it cool like that on the baking paper?
Yeah. And then you just go like this. All right, well, let me grab a knife here and in a bowl. Yeah, you got the bowl. Now watch how I chop this, though.
Oh, with such finesse.
You can see how uniform and precise I'm chopping
Very.
It.
Takes
you have
a long
to have
time.
Every piece exactly the same. I could really get all crazy and have this stuff going everywhere.
Oh, yeah, now I see the resemblance.
Are you seeing it?
Yeah.
And the texture. See, you've got the moist on the inside and the crispiness on the outside, just like chicken. And so we're going to put this right here.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would just
extra vitamin C for that. Celery, right? This is celery?
Uh-huh. Yep.
Oh, I like celery, but not too much. Red onion.
I'm going to get some, and then add your mayonnaise to it.
Okay.
Well, actually, go ahead.
Yeah?
It's like a tofu spread. That's how you do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. Now, is that too much?
Well, we'll see. Only I'm going to just add a little bit more. Now, flavor-wise, this is going to be great just the way it is. There's no more salt in it because you have the salt from there.
Oh, because we had the Bragg's,
But here's some sage, rosemary, oregano, and basil. And that is really blasting, I mean seriously blasting flavor into this.
Mm.
So let you stir that, and I'm gonna grab a bun over here. Oh, let's see, I got a bun right here. And whoop, got a sandwich tray right here. And we're gonna knock this out. All right, put that right there on. You can set it up.
Oh, look at me. Yeah. You're not gonna put me in your next restaurant, are you?
No.
Hey, not without a bit of training.
Kitchens are supposed to be messy.
Oh, are they? Oh, great.
Some of these people, they edit, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And it doesn't show a real kitchen.
How's that?
Boom. Within 5 minutes, you've got a healthy sandwich.
I can't describe that.
Yeah.
That is absolutely breathtaking.
Simple.
Thanks, Mark.
There we go.
Remember, you can find all our recipes on our website, hopetv.org/gohealthy/recipes. Jane has bravely agreed to share her story with us, though I need to warn you that it may not be suitable for younger viewers. Her earliest memory, at the age of 2, was of her mother leaving the family home for the last time. She was moved to a kind neighbour because her father couldn't manage a toddler. At 5, she was allowed to move home, but that's when the sexual abuse by her brother began, and it continued until she was 11. Here is the next part of her story.
My father, by this time, had begun to suspect that something was going on, and he asked me about it, and he put an end to it, which I'm so thankful. And I wished I would have said something. And when you're young enough, you don't even really know that it's wrong. It just becomes a part of your life. And then when you get older, you realize, well, this is not right. And you want to say something, but you're too scared to say something. By the age of 13, I got invited to a dance in our neighborhood. The Olsons were having the party because their oldest son, Laverne, was home from the service. And so we went, and he was in his uniform, and oh, what a handsome man he was. And it's like, wow, I had eyes for him, but he had no eyes for me. And he danced the night away with Rosemary, and that made me jealous because I thought, well, why won't he look at me? And I thought to myself the next morning, well, I'll fix that. So I called him up, and I asked him if he wanted a rendezvous down by the river. Well, of course, he said, yeah, being an older guy, Yeah, he wanted a rendezvous down by the river. Well, that little rendezvous almost cost me my life, because 9 months later I had a baby, and I ended up having a C-section. I almost bled out, and they somehow or another they got the bleeding stopped, and I had to give the baby up for adoption. And then at the age of 17, I was living with my mother and going to school at Pasadena High. And I met a fella, and of course had sex, because that was no big thing. That's just something that you did. And I got pregnant from that encounter. Well, then I met George, who was my first husband, and he asked me to marry him. I didn't. That was another big mistake I made. We just make so many mistakes. And you wish you could take them back, but you can't. And so he asked me to marry him, and I said yes. And while we were married, I had another baby. We were married for 3 years. I was 17 at the time. And during that whole 3 years, we only lived together 6 months, because he kept getting in trouble with the law. So we ended up getting a divorce. And then I met my husband when I was 20. We met on a blind date, and that blind date has lasted for over 40 years.
We all love a happily ever after story, right? But there's more later in the show. We're talking today with Dr. Robin Ortiz, specialist in finding ways to build resilience in children who experience dysfunctional homes and circumstances. I asked her how many adverse childhood events have been identified.
So the original ACEs study, I will refer to them as ACEs for brevity, originally looked at 10. Those three domains, again, I mentioned. So abuse, and that includes physical and emotional abuse. Neglect, also physical and emotional neglect. And then household dysfunction, which has sort of a variety within it. One being separation from parents or caregivers, such as a circumstance of divorce, which again you can imagine spans all socioeconomic domains as well as racial groups, but also different household dysfunctions that one might not always necessarily think of. So incarceration of a parent or a caregiver, a substance abuse or mental health condition within a caregiver, or somebody who is in the household of the child who is growing up. And importantly, this is why it's actually come to the media recently in the setting of the United States conditions of family separation. And so really that's that understanding of separation of caregivers is broad-spanning. And so originally it was 10, but it has since been referred to as the expanded ACEs. So there's been multiple studies who have looked at different types of adversity in childhood. And so although I mentioned that these original ACEs span all socioeconomic domains, it is important to know that socioeconomic status, such as falling below the poverty line in income, does predispose to an increased risk of certain ACEs, although not all. And so, for example, expanded ACEs may include things like food insecurity, or having parents that may not be able to provide financially or offer support for certain after-school activities. So limited access to resources and those sorts of things have also been expanded on. Bullying is something newly coming to light in the media. And then, of course, there's a whole slew of things being looked at depending on the political environment, such as the effects of immigration and things I referred to earlier. So
ACEs must affect a lot of children. How many children today are affected by them?
Good question. And I think the number is ever changing, and also dependent on what children are who we are surveying. So if that be citizens of the United States of America, children in terms of count nationally is much different. I just heard an estimate from the Centers for Disease Control today, actually watching some new modules that were just released today as well on this topic through the CDC, that said 35 million children may be affected annually at least. I don't think that encompasses all of them, because ACEs importantly go underreported and underestimated, and hence why we're trying to bring this topic to light.
And is it increasing?
Yes, I would say that it is probably, possibly flawed by research design in that it is now coming to attention to be surveyed and asked. And so naturally that would encompass more individuals that would answer yes to having an ACE, but it may be simply because prior to 1998 there was no terminology for ACEs independent of asking for interpartner violence, for example, or individual risk factors. Mm-hmm. So it's possible it's increasing by statistics simply because we're asking.
Right. And now you say that these are linked to chronic disease in adulthood.
Yes.
Does it matter how many ACEs you are positive for as to what your risk is, or is it a different relationship?
I love this question. It's very important. I'm going to start by saying we had talked about the prevalence of ACEs in children, but in the original study that surveyed adults, it was 2/3 of adult Americans who reported having an exposure to an ACE in childhood. So we are talking about, whether you're talking about 35 million children or 2/3 of adults, that's quite a lot. And so of those adults, yes, there is an association with chronic disease. Of the original 10 ACEs is the prevalence of 2/3, but about 1 in 7 or 1 in 8 adults had reported 4 or more of those original 10 ACEs. And to your question, yes, those who had four ACEs by history had a much increased risk of having a chronic disease. Now, again, it depends on which disease you're looking at. But the greater the number of ACEs in childhood, the greater the risk of having chronic disease in adulthood. And I will also mention that although we talk about quantifying ACEs as an exposure for disease, it's also important to note that it may impact symptom severity or significance of disease or disease burden. So I'm actually working on some research that has demonstrated, for example, in individuals with chronic pain, specifically fibromyalgia, those who had had both physical and emotional abuse had a greater risk of having increased pain sensitivity as well as full body pain. So you're already talking about a group of individuals who are at a higher risk of having an ACE and having chronic disease, but even further within that cohort, the greater the exposure, the greater the outcome of symptoms. And similarly, we're seeing similar things in diabetes and cardiovascular disease. It's quite possible that the burden of stress in childhood or the chronicity of stress may also affect the pathology of disease. So there's a quantification not just in the number of ACEs, but also the burden of exposure.
No matter how severe or how many, there is a way to buffer ourselves from the storms of life. Here is a thoughtful moment before the break.
You may have heard the experiment in 1944 with orphaned babies. Their needs were met, but they had no eye contact, they heard no voice, and they received the minimum of physical touch. Many died for no other reason. You see, we were created for physical touch, for connection with other people. The Bible says we were created in the image of God and that God enjoys a closeness and companionship that is beyond our understanding as Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Research shows that strong social support boosts health. For example, HIV patients have a lower viral load when they're socially connected. Women survive colorectal cancer for longer when they're socially connected. And seniors with one or two chronic diseases have the same death rates when they're socially connected as those with no disease at all. In the Bible, God urges us to restore broken relationships quickly, to meet regularly for worship, and to socialize or to break bread together often. God desires for us to enjoy strong social connections with each other, but also with him.
Do you want to know how to boost your immune system? Be active. So join Sean right now as he guides us through some immune-boosting moves, right?
That's right. And we're going to start with working some abdominal areas. And, you know, many people say, I want to get a six-pack. Well, the six-pack involves much more than what you can see here. It involves our obliques, it involves our glutes, our lower back, the entire region, all right? How we do things involves our entire core, all right? It's how we pick up boxes. So today we're going to focus on the entire core, all right, from the front and the back. Three exercises, we're gonna have a great time with it, all right?
All right.
So let's go into our march, kind of keep the core nice and tight. I really want you to get involved in or get engaged with bringing your knee up and keeping it here tight. That's all core, right?
Right.
All right, slow it down and put this leg up. Hold it there. Now what you'll find is that core needs to turn on in order to pick this up, all right? Waking your core up. Every time we do an exercise, it has some type of core-centric focal point, all right? And that is here, all right?
Right.
What we're gonna do today is work the glutes, work the lower back, and work our obliques, all right?
All
so
right.
We're gonna have to go on to our back, all right? Let's
okay.
do it. First exercise, we have a glute bridge. I want you to bring the heels of your sneaker close, yep, all the way as much as you can. And your goal here is to bring your hips up all the way as high as possible. In order for you to get really engaged with this, you can hold that position, squeeze your glute as much as possible. Again, working the entire core region. Squeeze it, hold it. Tap the ground down. Don't rest there. Pretend like the floor is hot. And back up. All the way up, squeeze, and up and down. A good count for this is about 12 to 15. When you get to about 10, that's when you really start to feel your glutes wake up and it becomes a little spicy. All right?
Feel the burn.
You will feel the burn. So the goal here is for you to feel your glutes. And another way to really make this more challenging is if you had a dumbbell, you could put it right on each hip, which allows you to really work your core a little bit more. This is the glute bridge, a focal point in working your core, not just here. All right? So now that we're in this position, keep your feet there. We're going to work our obliques going left to right. Okay? So what this allows you to do is contract your obliques, squeeze, and breathe. All right? Perfect. What I want you to do now is inhale through your nose and exhale through your mouth. Now, the coaching cue that I would want to remind you here is always keep a nice distance between your chin and your collarbone. Allows for oxygen to go all the way down and for you to get a good exchange of carbon dioxide and oxygen. Three, two, and one. Now that you're there, you work your glutes, you work your obliques. Now you have to work your lower abdominal area where everyone typically has some trouble. Put the hand underneath your glutes, hold it there, extend your feet all the way out. Take a nice deep breath, lift it about 3 inches off the ground, and go, alternate, breathe. This will wake up your entire area, core area, okay? Now, in order for you to do this right, find a point where you feel nothing in your lower back. If you feel anything in your lower back, you may need to bring your feet up a bit higher.
Go up here.
Yep. Which will allow your back to be nice and flat, all right? But if you feel anything, you can adjust, okay?
Okay.
Now, to challenge it, I'll challenge you for a second. I'm gonna challenge you.
Oh, really?
Ready? There you go. Let's hold it 6 inches off the ground. Hold it right there. All right, what I want you to do is take a nice deep breath and hold. This will wake your core up. Now, let's have a conversation. No, 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 back up. Let's have a conversation while we're here, okay?
No.
No, 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 let's talk about it. Let's talk about it right here.
Oh.
Nah, no,
it will wake you up. You made me mean today. What got into you?
No. So what you can do is start 6 inches off the ground and go up a little bit higher and then go back down and then go into your flutter kicks. There's so many ways that I can challenge your core.
I might just start with the basic way.
Yeah. All right. So again, working the core, the upper body, lower body, and the glutes is a great way to challenge that whole entire region. Get it stronger for everything that we do on a functional level.
Yeah.
All right.
Helps prevent those bad backs.
It does. All right. So what we're going to do is let's stretch nice and easy. Nice and easy. Take a deep breath. This allows you to wake your core up. Put your hands on your chest. Lean back a bit. Open up your core region. Come forward. Reach for your toes. Contract your core. Keep it nice and tight. Come up. You are good to go.
I don't know if I should thank you, but thank you.
You are welcome.
Are you considering learning a new sport? It could be a huge advantage. Recent research found that men who improved their physical fitness reduced their chance of death by 44%. Middle-aged and older men who began a moderately vigorous sports activity like cycling, soccer, basketball, or hiking lived longer. They also have lower rates of death from heart disease. It is time to get off the bench. Taking up a new sport is another ageless advantage.
Thank you for your questions. Let me have a go at a few of them. Melville asks, should I be concerned with foods such as meat analogues that have MSG in them? Well, monosodium glutamate, or MSG, or in some countries it's an E number, E621, it's a flavour enhancer that the FDA has classified as generally regarded as safe. But it's very controversial. There are so many reports of side effects from consuming MSG. It's made from fermenting starches and it's derived from an amino acid called glutamate. And it's one of the most common amino acids in nature. So no one can quite figure out why MSG triggers a reaction when the amino acid glutamate doesn't. It's something to do with the dose or the fact that it's isolated from other protein molecules when it's put into that salt-like form. Now, in nature, it stimulates nerve cells, and so MSG has been labelled an excitotoxin or a neurotoxin. It's possible that some people are sensitive to MSG and others are not, and those that are sensitive will get a headache, flushing, sweating, a tightness in their face along with numbness and tingling and burning of their face. Their heart can get quite rapid or fluttering. Chest pain, asthma, nausea and weakness can also happen, which is very frightening, and it can be a little bit prolonged too. So if you know that there's MSG in your food, don't eat too much, especially since it's usually found in highly processed foods that are not healthy anyway. Michael asked, I have severe COPD or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease or emphysema. Are there any natural cures derived from mushrooms or other herbs that can repair my lungs? Well, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease and emphysema refer to progressive, irreversible damage to lung tissue. The small air sacs in the lungs, which are elastic, naturally they will close down just like your lungs will naturally close, they get damaged, and as far as we know, repair is not possible. But nutritional research shows that a diet rich in plants with high amounts of antioxidants can improve the symptoms and slow the progression of the damage. So try and eat lots of fruits and vegetables. Connie asks, what should I do that will help with restless leg syndrome? There's a tough one. Try to exercise every day. Jog on the spot every afternoon, sort of as you're heading towards the end of the day. Jog on the spot for a few minutes and then give your legs a good stretch afterwards. So you warm those muscles and stretch them out. Move every hour on the hour all day. Again, followed by a gentle stretch. In other words, you're just going to keep your leg muscles moving and stretching during the day. That's just going to be their normal regime. And hopefully they won't be bothering you so much at night. Now, at night, some people find a hot bath before bed is helpful. Others like to put ice packs on or hot packs on. Either way, it's all boosting the circulation. Now, there are things that you want to avoid, like alcohol, nicotine, caffeine, not eating close to bed, and doing progressive muscle relaxation before bed or as you get into bed. And be really rigorous about your sleep hygiene, getting to bed at the same time, getting up at the same time, and getting enough sleep. Love those questions. If you have one, put it into Facebook, text, our website, and my team or I will do our best to answer it. Like us on Facebook and join our community. Now, let's see what we could buy over at the store today. Wheat is a favourite grain for two reasons. It's easy to separate from the seeds from the plant due to the gluten content, and the dough becomes elastic when it's mixed with liquid. This makes it very versatile because then it can be cooked whole or turned into porridge, bread or pasta. It's not surprising then that two-thirds of the grain consumed in America is wheat. Unfortunately though, most of it is not whole wheat, even though that has well-established benefits, like 30% fewer strokes, less heart disease and type 2 diabetes, better weight management, less asthma, lower blood pressure, and fewer inflammatory diseases. Different varieties of wheat look fairly similar, but offer different nutrients and can be digested a little differently. So so that people with celiac disease who should avoid all wheat, but some people with non-celiac gluten sensitivity are able to tolerate farro, spelt, kamut, or Khorasan wheat. So experiment a little. You may be pleasantly surprised. Whole wheat is easy to cook. Wheat berries cook overnight in the crock pot. Wheat flakes take 30 to 40 minutes to steam. Bulgur wheat cooks in about 25 minutes. Whole wheat pasta like this in just 8 minutes. And whole wheat couscous is already cooked. Just soak in boiling water. It's that easy. Bon appetit. We caught up with Dr. Robin Ortiz after she gave a great lecture at the American College of Lifestyle Medicine meeting in Indianapolis. There she discussed an easy way to remember the types of adverse child events. She explains the three E's.
Yeah, I think this is really important because there is a lot of terminology and a lot of semantics associated with ACEs, trauma, stress. These are very popular words in science and media at present. So the three E's brings a simplification of ACEs and trauma in general. Importantly, in the research literature or the medical field, these different terms do carry different weight, but for simplicity here, I'll explain it by this model. So the E of event, it means that an event can be stressful, and it may be stressful talking in front of a group of people. It may be stressful going on a job interview, but these are appropriate positive stressors. These are things that we develop us as human beings, right? However, an event can also be something we might all unanimously agree is a traumatic or stressful event, such as experiencing a burglary or robbery or an abusive situation, a violent situation, gun violence in school. I'm pretty sure that majority of people you ask would say, yes, that is a stressful experience. However, the next E, experience, does encompass the individual's perspective because there's some gray area there as well. So when I get on an airplane to fly somewhere, I personally am comfortable and able to relax and get some work done. But there certainly could be another individual sitting next to me who had severe anxiety and needs to sit back and do some mindfulness exercises to cope with the experience of the flight. And
so you're saying we can all go through the same event, but how we experience that event is variable based on our background, etc.
Exactly.
All right, so the next E?
Yeah, so the last E is effect. And this is where adverse childhood experiences actually comes into play in terms of chronic disease, because it's not necessarily the experience themselves, but it's that they're labeled as adverse in that the effect is adverse. It's an adverse outcome. We talk about this in terms of pharmacology and medications, and you have an adverse effect, that means you've had a side effect and it's not a good thing. Well, similarly, an experience that is traumatic, whether in childhood, adulthood, you name it, is identified in having an aftermath that carries some weight. And so those three E's in sequence really determine if something is going to be adverse and be associated with a poor outcome.
So why this sequelae to ACEs?
Yes.
What's actually going on? You were talking about the chronicity of stress, that chronic stress, even as a child, because of your environment or what's happening around you. So why is that linked to disease as an adult?
Yeah. So I think there's multiple hypotheses. There's a lot of literature that points to different underpinnings to this proposed mechanism. So in some, I alluded to earlier, it may be behavioral choices. It may be a matter of lifestyle afterwards. And so simply put, if an individual is exposed to a stressor and perhaps self-medicates with substance use or manifests in mental illness later on, that may affect one's lifestyle choices. They may be more likely to smoke, have sequelae of drinking, chronically drinking, or eating poorly. Also, the same risk factors associated with ACEs are associated with chronic disease, such as food insecurity, as I mentioned earlier, lower socioeconomic status, access to food, also associated with chronic disease. However, there's a biological underpinning as well, and that's in a separate cohort. So even independent of those behavioral factors, when controlling for those in studies that are designed well, there is evidence that chronic stress functions through a neurobiological pathway in the body.
So you're suggesting that stress in a maturing brain in a child might actually change that brain development, both structure and function?
Yes. So it will change the neurobiology and brain development, but it may also affect even down to the DNA. And the DNA is ubiquitous throughout the body. So those effects are systemic.
So are you talking epigenetic changes, the gene switches, or the DNA itself? The genes themselves?
Yeah, so not the genes themselves, but genes have to be read by the body in order to produce an effect. And so the epigenetic mechanisms or modifications of expression, of the code of those genes, is what's affected by chronic stress. There's a lot of literature that's suggesting that through what we call the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis, cortisol burden may be playing a role.
So you're saying that the stress in the child creates a cortisol response by their adrenal gland, and that cortisol rises and is then flowing and changing the way that the DNA in their cells is being read, and it sets them up for disease later in life. How much later are we talking about? I know you're talking also about the lifestyle choices.
Right.
But then the disease later down the road.
Yeah, this is a great question that I hope to work on in my career.
We haven't answered that yet.
Yeah. Right. I think we have in some regards. So we know that that children who have experienced ACEs have a higher risk of having attention deficit disorder or behavioral problems. That's a pretty rapid effect. So, you know, from 0 to 5 years old is the highest risk for development of the brain and for children to develop their coping mechanisms and emotional intelligence, if you will. If that period has passed, then right in that same time, 4 years old, I believe, is what the DSM criteria allows for a diagnosis of ADHD. So you're talking about an overlap of possibly the same time frame. If you're talking about something like diabetes or cancer, we don't really have those answers yet. It's very speculative that we're just beginning to learn that cortisol and stress burden can actually turn on and turn off genes. So to know the timing, to know the actual degree that weighs in on risk as compared to those behavioral choices is still being elucidated.
So watch this space, and I'm sure we'll all be learning a lot more in the next few years. Coming straight ahead, the last part of Jane's story. During childhood, Jane experienced parental separation, sexual abuse, teen pregnancies and hemorrhage, then, while still a teen, marriage and divorce. Here is the rest of her story.
After we got married and Kenny and Donna were a little bit older, we had tried for almost 10 years before I was finally able to conceive a son, and what a blessing he was at the time. And I didn't have any more children after that, but the road has not always been smooth. It's been bumpy, just like any other marriage, but we have worked things out and stayed together, and I think I love him more now than I ever did before, and he is so supportive in everything that I do, and I support him too, and so it's just a wonderful relationship, and we put God in the center of our lives, so that makes it even more special. Right now I'm taking care of my two granddaughters. This is Harmony, and this is Tess, and this is their dad, Henry, and he's made some bad choices in his life, and so he's not with us. And Tess's mother she's made some bad choices in her life, and she's not with us either. But you know, I made some bad choices too. I drugs got into the picture, and I was sent to jail and I was sent to prison for about 6 months. So right now I have quite a prison ministry going on. 6 people that are in prison that I'm writing to and sending material. I have forgiven my brother, and it's taken me a lot of years to come to terms with what happened, because I always thought, well, what if someone finds out what happened to me? You know, how are they going to think about me and this, that, and the other thing? Well, it is what it is, and it's a part of my life that I cannot change. For those that are out there that are suffering, put the Lord in your life, and He will help you deal with the feelings and being able to forgive and be able to talk about it and move on.
Amen. There is hope for healing from any and every circumstance. I asked today's guest, Dr. Robin Ortiz, why some people experience the same trauma yet have very different outcomes.
So this is the perfect time to talk about resilience. So first, let me lay the foundation and say that whether or not one has experienced ACEs or adversity, there is an ability to develop skills for coping, because inevitably in the human experience, there will be stress and there will be burden. And there is a resilient zone. What we need to do is early in life, train the brain, train the body, train the experience, the community, to foster resilience, in that gives a child skills that will help them later in life to stay in the resilient zone. So when a stressor triggers them, instead of swinging, both in terms of physiology, heart racing, cortisol levels, and also swinging behaviorally in terms of aggression and reactivity, building those coping skills early on allows to build resilience. And so, yes, there are individuals who have been exposed to skill development in that area, or who are in environments such as schools or healthy families, talking about emotions, talking about feelings, and that will foster a resilient reaction, if you will, rather than an effect of adversity.
So you're saying talking about the stressor, often we don't want to hurt the child or damage them by talking about it, but you're saying it's the opposite. We do need to talk about it, and we need to talk about feelings and help them to do that.
Yeah, well, I just want to rephrase a little bit. So talking about a trauma or a stress that has occurred might be a bit of a sensitive subject. In fact, yes, talking about trauma in some cases can re-elicit trauma, and so should be done at the guise of a healthcare professional with somebody to facilitate that conversation. What I'm referring to is that children early on, families and individuals at all stages should be talking about emotions, talking about their experiences, and communicating effectively what they're feeling. So for example.
So this is more preventive before things happen. Okay.
It's preventive, and it also will, one can still talk about those things later in life, despite the fact that they have happened or not happened, because we're constantly learning. Our brain is always developing new synaptic connections, and so that can happen at any stage. And I think an important analogy I want to mention quickly that I think will help listeners maybe understand this a little more is there can be a crayon box that has like 3 colors in it, blue, green, and red, right, for a child or an adult. There also can be a crayon box with 36 colors. So if a child wants to be expressive and draw something, or you or I want to draw something, would it not be easier with 36 colors? Would we not be able to express and communicate with others with 36 colors? And so what I'm saying is, if their only manifestations are to be angry, happy, or shy, for example, then any experience will have an effect, to bring it back to the ease, of those 3 emotions. If they have 36 options to choose from, they may be able to express, oh, this is guilt or shame or anxiety or frustration, and it won't all manifest as simply anger or reactivity. So building that crayon set any time in life is going to help build resilience. And there are exercises and ways to do that. And sometimes it may be something like therapy or a multidisciplinary practice to help a family or an individual. And it sometimes can happen in the home or in the school setting. And that's what I truly would advocate for, is that our policies and our communities support this sort of learning and education for all ages.
So if a family wanted to do this, how would they teach their children? Are there resources available? Share some of those.
Yeah, there absolutely are. There's probably too many for me to list, but I'd be happy to say they can also visit online. I have a site where I'm building sort of resource community for individuals. But some of those, we'll just give some examples. Broad strokes would begin with the Centers for Disease Control. They have handouts and flyers for families, but also for practitioners that are interacting with individuals. Not necessarily individuals that they are saying we're treating for ACEs, but all individuals. Another one would be the Network for Traumatic Stress. There's a national network as well. So there's some websites out there if one simply searches for this topic. However, I have been recently associated in my journey of learning about ACEs with an organization called Generation Mindful. And it serves as an example for many other organizations doing similar things, where it has toolkits that teachers or parents can buy that allow them to have tools in terms of games and play and activities for children to do, to learn about emotions, to learn about communications. And I bet you'll find that the parents, the teachers involved, also learn something from those experiences. So my favorite would be to say, even without the toolkits or purchasing anything, would be the concept of time in, which Generation Mindful has a time in toolkit, but one could devise something similarly in a classroom or at home, that when a child is experiencing or manifesting anger, that maybe one of those other crayons in the crayon box, so frustration or other, instead of time out and social isolation, which we know social isolation also leads to chronic disease, giving an alternative activity such as a coloring book that one can display their feelings or frustrations in, or a board that says, I'm gonna try and label where my emotion lies today, or a stuffed animal that they could play with. And so there are toolkits available for purchase. There's also things that individuals can build them at the just to manifest these on their own. And I encourage parents, families, and caregivers to be creative on this topic.
And your website?
Yes, it is very simple. So it is www.drrobinortiz.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I really had a pleasure talking to you today.
If you are one of the many who experienced one or more of the stressors or traumas that we've discussed on today's show, please be encouraged. It's never too late to find healing and to build better coping mechanisms. We should all talk to our children about what's happening in their little hearts. Teach them words that can label their emotions accurately so they can learn how to express their feelings. Then we can teach them how to deal with their own emotions, and soon they'll be able to deal with the emotions in others. That's going to give them so much success in life. That's all from me today. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.